brush your teeth, wash your face. And you can't, well, you can escape it, but, you know, there are certain things every day that you do, or I do anyway. And you know, it's not glamorous at all. It's just sort of, it's the routine of the day, which again is interesting. There's another interest, I suppose, these common things, these shared things, but they're not shared and they're not discussed.
This is the third episode of the Domestic Soundscape podcast series commissioned by Sound and Music for the 2009 Cut and Splice Festival, Living Rooms. This year's Cut and Splice Festival is all about everyday places, home, and the ordinary. This week's podcast is going to focus on ideas of repetition, routine, and habit. At the start of the show, you heard Karen from Karen Magazine speaking about the things we all do, but often don't talk about. I met with her a few weeks ago to discuss the relationship between Karen Magazine and the everyday.
Look, going down the high street and just kind of poggling about, really, will give us is that kind of sense of the stuff that surrounds us all the time.
Been invited round to some neighbours to see, so we'll just have that if you don't mind.
That's absolutely fine. I'll get some milk as well. The basics.
Yeah, get some basics. Do you want to
get a basket as well, yeah. Oh, thanks. It's amazing how loud these fridges are.
I know, isn't it?
And whether that's an activity, whether it's interaction, it always becomes invisible because it's almost like too familiar with it, you take it for granted. So therefore it's almost like then when you elevate something, say like within the magazine, not elevated, that's the wrong word, when you document it, if you like, it's there to see, it almost then takes on that extraordinary quality. So there's lots going on really, isn't there?
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, I'm good, thank you.
Good.
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
All right, some jumpers today.
Okay.
So there's three.
Right.
Yeah.
Your family's again, please.
This invisibility, and yet it's so present. It is every. You know, we are living it all the time. But I find quite fascinating. Now I think you have to embrace that try and embrace that. And you know, I like the dull. I really do. And I like routine, you know, and I like that interspersed with kind of, you know, tweets and, you know, I like the full kind of...
The spectrum.
Yeah, that's the word I'm looking for.
I talked last week about John Cage's 4 minutes and 33 seconds and how presenting the ordinary, everyday soundscape in the concert hall situation altered our relationship to it. Karen Magazine is the print world equivalent of John Cage's 4 minutes and 33 seconds. Emptied of the fashion shoots, celebrity gossip and advice columns we expect to find in a magazine. Instead, an account of ordinary reality is carefully framed and presented to us within its pages. You might open it and find transcribed conversations inside it.
What are you having for tea, anyway?
Tea? Mm. Today? Mm. Spag ball. Spaghetti ball. Lovely. Spaghetti ball. Yes.
So what are the potatoes and the sprouts on the stove from, then?
I thought I'd do sprouts with it. We had some left over. And the potatoes, I thought, they're left over from yesterday, so I thought I might fry them up and just sort of arrange them around the side.
Right,
OK. Yeah?
Yeah.
No,
I'm with you. The dog doesn't have them first.
Perhaps an interview with the local butcher.
I'll see you again, boy.
Yeah, take care, my friend. Hello.
Hiya.
Hiya.
Hi there.
What do you like today?
Can I get sausages, please?
You certainly can.
And I'll get some of your eggs, too.
Are you open on Friday or not?
Yeah, up to work.
Yeah.
Cool. We've got to get our offers first, haven't we?
Yeah, we are, yeah. That's right. Thanks for watching.
Take care, bye-bye now.
Hello.
What do you like?
When I was asking you about what things or what places or people would routinely be associated with the magazine, and the two first things you said was like the butcher and the coal man, I found that really interesting. Mm. That those were kind of two anchor points for the magazine.
Mm.
Two such tangible things that you have to have.
Yes. I mean, the reality of life is that you do. I mean, and all these kind of almost hidden services as well, aren't they? Like, you need your bins empty. I know it probably sounds a bit sort of, I don't know, political now, but you do need your bins emptying, and you do need the electricity to come on, and you do need your food, and yes, you do need your heat. And, you know, yeah, they're very practical things that I try not to lose sight of, really, and the people that provide them to me as well. You know.
Karen Magazine emerges out of the relationships Karen has formed in her community, and relationships are central to the publication.
Genuinely, I feel like people genuinely give and want to, and I want to genuinely respect them and sort of and handle their words very carefully and the images very carefully, very gently. Yeah. So, and everyone that, this is moving on slightly, but everyone that does agree to be included into the kind of community, I suppose, of the magazine, which is developing, sort of who's in it, what voices are in it, and who reads it, they get a copy, basically. The people that are in it get a copy. And that's kind of, I know, hey, wow. You know, but I can't be any more generous at the moment, you know.
Maybe, but I think that's amazing for somebody to return a conversation that you had back to you in this way.
Oh, wow, I haven't thought about that.
Yeah, it's like having it returned to you, in a way, after you have a conversation.
No, I like that, I like that.
It kind of comes back, and you go, oh, wow. Oh, yeah, I did say
it's
that.
It's almost like
a
photograph, isn't it?
Yeah. Anyway.
There is obviously a difference between audio recordings and printed excerpts of conversations. In the pages of Karen Magazine, the things people say are silent on the page, whereas in audio form, you get to hear them.
I didn't realise Carol had a thing about potatoes. And it was just perchance.
No,
it was. But we got talking about it, you know, as you do. And then it was, oh, I've got a T-shirt. Okay, then she's like, I've got another T-shirt about potatoes. So we came round and just sort of had a look at them and had a chat about them.
That's how that happened. Too.
Yeah.
Well, I worked in a supermarket, you see, for 15 years. And you get lovely, lovely customers. And there was just this one customer who asked our supervisor. She came in, she was obviously on a mission to ask every question about potatoes. Why are they called Charlotte? Where did they come from? About New Jersey potatoes, where did they come from? And by the end of the session with this customer, our supervisor came back and there was steam coming out of her ears. She said, don't ever mention potatoes to me again. And I thought, Every time I had a customer, I rang the bell and lifted up a bag of potatoes. And then I had my T-shirt printed with potatoes have feelings too. And even now I mention it to her.
But in terms of how we value or consider our casual everyday social encounters, I don't believe it makes such a difference what medium they're recorded in. The point is that once you take something that's normally taken for granted and represent it in a context that commands focused attention, you have to think differently about both the thing itself and the way in which you normally hear or view it. And in terms of the domestic soundscape, it's essential to consider conversation because it's a huge part of what we hear in our homes. The hellos and goodbyes that begin and end our encounters are, from a certain perspective, like musical refrains or motifs that we repeat over and over again.
How are you? Fine, thank you. You know, it's just, it is a pastime.
There's a rhythm to it as well. It's like a kind of, like everyone knows what to do.
Yeah, absolutely. I quite like, if I ask somebody how they are, I do want to know them. And if somebody asks me how I am, then I will say, which sometimes can be a bit sort of, well, you know, I usually say, well, do you really want to know? Okay, fine, well, I'm a bit tired today, actually, truth be known, or, you know, whatever. So, no, I think just because it's all part and parcel of the, you know, an important part of the relationship.
It is.
It's startings and it's endings, you know.
Yeah.
Beginnings and endings, sorry.
Well, it's like it opens and closes the time you spend together, doesn't
absolutely,
it?
Absolutely, absolutely. We do it a lot, really. I mean, I'm just trying to think now. I probably do it more than I realise, having just started to talk to you about it. But you kind of have to do it, you know. But, you know, it's very rare that you just kind of launch into something. I think, yes, I think it is.
Okie doke.
Right, it's lovely to see you.
Oh, am I, love?
Yeah.
We're just about to do it the French way, you know. Mwah, mwah.
You don't want the French way, do you?
Thanks ever so. We'll see you soon.
Thanks anyway, Roger.
Yes, thanks.
Brilliant. Okay. Brilliant. All right, see
thanks
you guys.
Very much.
See you then, Felix.
Bye.
Bye.
Okay.
Okay.
Bye.
See you. Okay.
See ya.
Bye, girls.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Nice to see you.
The impact of recorded conversations first hit me when I heard the work of Mundane Appreciation. Founded by Kayla Bell and Claudio Figueiredo, Mundane Appreciation is an art concept in the form of an agency dedicated to exploring and celebrating the processes of everyday life. Collaborating with Mundane Appreciation last year to make the Fantastical Reality radio show, I learned how articulate people are when they talk about things they have done or thought about all their lives, but have maybe never expressed to anyone. Here is one of the features put together by Mundane Appreciation for the Fantastical Reality radio show.
When I get up in the morning, I brush my teeth. I take my toothbrush out of the toothbrush holder, wet the bristles with some cold water, apply the toothpaste, and then I brush my teeth. I do my all of my back teeth first, so I do the bottom left-hand side and the bottom right-hand side, the top left-hand side, the top right-hand side, and then I do it the front, and then behind the teeth as well. And then occasionally the odd tongue and roof of the mouth scrub.
In the morning, I'm a bit of a zombie, so I just rush through it, really. It's not too much of a pain. Usually maybe 2 to 3 minutes in the morning. In the evening, I like to have a longer scrub, you know, when I'm a bit more focused. But the morning one, you know, I'm not really that aware of what I'm doing in the morning, really. I always wake up late and just zombie my way through the day until, you know, sort of 10 or 11 when I start to wake up.
Once you've listened to this, it's hard not to think about your own toothbrushing routine. Silent internal decisions and preferences become suddenly audible and public. And even on points of disagreement, such as whether an electronic or manual toothbrush is best, we still experience mutual contact and recognition, because there is a shared understanding that however they are accomplished, certain things like eating, cleaning and sleeping must happen. For most people, the sound of brushing your teeth will be one of the sonic events that takes place in the morning. My routine involves also the kettle going on, the toilet flushing, a big pot of tea being made, and my laptop booting up. The sonic life of appliances and the daily routine are inexorably bound together in one's domestic soundscape. A project that looks at everyday appliance sounds is the Domestic Appliance Audio Research Society. This society was formed in 2007 with the express purpose of pursuing a non-exotic approach to field recording. The Domestic Appliance Audio Research Society collects and represents those sounds that occur in the course of our ordinary lives and gives them back to us via a well-designed and carefully edited web presence, maintained both on MySpace and on Benedict Drew's website. If you visit the online homes of the Domestic Appliance Audio Research Society, you will find recordings of toasters, electricity meters, fridges, kitchen lights, and so on. A deadpan and refreshingly pared-down approach characterises the websites of the Domestic Appliance Audio Research Society. Clear in purpose, self-explanatory, and uncluttered, the collected audio samples are presented so that you can contemplate the sounds of appliances without distractions, and give your full attention to commonplace sounds that are rarely heard for their own sake, like this heater. In this sort of context, it's possible to appreciate the sonic qualities of things that we habitually use and typically ignore. Good quality recordings are like putting a microscope to sound, and once you've heard something in detail, your ear knows and remembers that sound. And you can't unhear something once the audible memory of it is inscribed in your mind. Recording and listening to the sounds of everyday appliances changes the way that we hear them in the normal course of life. Paul Whitty found that his long-term engagement with recording and listening to everyday sounds in this attentive way made it difficult for him to label sounds as being unremarkable when he went in search of unspectacular sounds for a project we set up on the Sound Diaries website. During Unspectacular February, our intention was that on every day of that month, Paul would upload an unspectacular sound to the Sound Diaries website.
I decided to record a home sound. I hadn't decided what it would be, and I hadn't decided where I'd record it. But in the afternoon, Hazel was doing something with her Kenwood Chefette, which is a kind of... it's a real vintage kind of item from the kind of mid-70s, and was, you know, whisking something. I thought, that is actually... that's an amazing sound. I must record that sound. Because the whisks were rubbing against... or knocking against the glass bowl, and making an extraordinary sound. So I recorded that, and I thought, well, that is a sound of the everyday. It was a sound that was just happening. I didn't contrive it. I didn't ask her to do it. And so I thought I'd use that. But then, of course, when I uploaded it onto the website, I realised that actually it was, a very beautiful sound. And although it was a sound of the everyday, it was quite spectacular. I think it was difficult because I've spent a lot of time talking up the everyday in terms of sound and sort of saying, well, actually, no, there is no hierarchy of sounds. This sound isn't necessarily a musical or a beautiful or a spectacular sound any more than that this sound of someone ripping a piece of paper or, you know, moving a chair is a spectacular or musical sound. So for me, conceptually, it was actually quite difficult because what I was having to do was say these are unspectacular sounds. Whereas I actually don't think... I think there are very few unspectacular sounds.
You don't actually have... You wouldn't have that kind of distinction.
Yeah, that's right, in a sense. But they were the sounds of unspectacular activities, definitely. So unloading the dishwasher, putting on the kettle, putting on the microwave, opening the fridge, pouring out milk, putting the oven on, feeding the cats. Activities which of themselves are utterly unremarkable. But in fact, when you start to record them, you know, you hear the purring cat, you hear the cat... cracking the kind of hard cat food, you hear the sound of a plastic tub falling on the tiled floor and bouncing on the floor, you hear the sound of a knife kind of cutting through cellophane film or, you know, whatever it might be. In fact, one time there was the sound of guacamole being spooned out of a tub, but it's extremely quiet. That was my favourite sound, I think, because it's so ephemeral.
And has the whole process of like recording a minute of sound every day in your kitchen now changed the way that you experience just being in that space?
Yeah, I think completely, because it became a different sort of space. It became a site for experiment in some ways. And every activity in there became a potential recordable activity. And so I hear the sounds in there in a completely different way now. Well, I hear them, actually. you know, I mean, you do hear them on your everyday activities, but you don't kind of frame them as in the same way that recording a minute of sound does. So now the kitchen's become kind of a repository of all these sounds and sound making activities. Yeah.
There was something incredibly affirmative about the unspectacular February recordings. As I visited the site each day to hear tea being made, or the sound of an oven humming quietly, I wondered how many other people were hearing similar things in their homes, and this made me think about what happens in my own kitchen at the end of the day. One of my favourite sounds is the sound of switching off the fluorescent strip lighting. This sound means I'm done in the kitchen, the washing up is finished for the day, there's no more cooking to be done, it's time for bed. Our attachment to the specific sounds that punctuate our days is something I became aware of when I attended a talk by Peter Cusack on his project Your Favourite London Sounds. This project was set up by Peter Cusack in 1998 and started off by collecting answers to the simple question, what is your favourite London sound? Peter Cusack has noted some general trends whilst dealing with over 1,000 answers to that question. Firstly, incidents of identical sounds being submitted are very rare, and there is no definitive favourite London sound, because our relationship to sounds is intimate and because the significance of sound is highly subjective from one person to the next. The unique life of a listener and the context in which they hear a sound plays a significant role in determining whether or not it is a favourite sound. Peter talked about how quite a few people, for instance, like the specific sound of their bus journey home, and noted that bus numbers and routes sound distinctive in the mind of each listener. This is the sound of the bell on the number 73 bus, recorded by Peter Cusack for Your Favourite London Sounds. It's not immediately clear to me what the difference would be between the bell or the soundscape on one bus route from another, but then I'm a casual user of London buses. If I lived in London and routinely used specific routes, I'm sure I'd listen differently. The number 17 bus is my current route into the centre of Reading, and in the same way that I know certain tunes really well, I know roughly how long the bus journey lasts and the sequence of sound events that take place during it. Similarly, I know well the sound of the clattery letterbox in the hall outside my flat, and part of my mind listens out for it at around 11:30 in the morning. Post through the letterbox is another one of the sounds recorded by Peter Cusack for Your Favourite London Sounds. How many of you keep an ear out for this sound? The comforting nature of sound, familiarity and memory, also came into people's decisions about which sounds to send into Your Favourite London Sounds. Onions frying in my flat was a sound that was important to a young Japanese immigrant living in London, as it reminded her of home cooking. Cooking is an emotive and essential aspect of human experience. The artist Hilary Neal explored this when she created a performance around the idea of peeling potatoes. I met with Hilary to discuss this performance and the other work she created with Anne Rapstoff and Barbara Dean during their collaborative project, Kitchen Antics and Appliances. In Hilary's kitchen, we discussed repetition, ritual, and everyday life. We started off by talking about the daily round, and the common task.
Which was one of my grandmother's sayings, and she would just say it as she did the washing up. Oh, the daily round, the common task, and or she would, she was full of these small philosophical sayings that would come out all the time as she was just going through her day, and they had real rich philosophy and ways of living a life and ways of seeing a life within them, and they were just little sentences that used to pour out of her mouth.
The daily round, the common task.
Yeah,
I think that's a really interesting idea, because so, like, particularly from almost like from a music point of view, really what you're talking about is a repetition of a theme or repetition of a thing. And so many of, like, the actions that we perform every day to live are in that mode of, like, routine. And there's, like, a way where people say that it's boring or you get bogged down by it. But in music, where you have a recurring theme that holds everything together. So I'm really interested in that idea of repetition and how it can be, how we can engage with that idea in a way of thinking, instead of thinking it's boring, where it's like, this is actually anchoring and grounding and, you know, all these other things.
Yeah, that's fascinating when you talk about it in terms of a riff in music, you know, because then the rest of the music can do all sorts of drama and highs and lows, and the two time or whatever you call it, you know, might be holding it together underneath, and it's,
and then it
or
comes
like
back.
The heartbeat in the body, you know, that's in the continuum, isn't it?
Repetition.
Yeah.
Creating an art gallery performance from the simple action of peeling potatoes is an effective strategy for bringing the special attention we reserve for art to a detailed and commonplace action found in everyday life. In the performance, Peel, Hilary sat on a very high chair, wearing an extremely long apron, and peeled many, many potatoes. The exaggeration of the action through her dress and the chair and through the sheer quantity of potatoes involved gave the whole spectacle an epic or symbolic quality. I recorded Hilary peeling potatoes while she told me about this performance.
They just absolutely fitted with the notion of the daily round and the common task, you know, because in Britain, potatoes are, have historically been a staple. So it's just, and also the notion, the, you know, the state of the action of peeling potatoes is very meditative, you know. And I wanted the potatoes to be still covered in the earth that they grew in, so I didn't want clean potatoes. So then just drop the peeled one. And I borrow potatoes from the local hotel. So I don't know how many I had. I had sacks and sacks of them so that the potatoes would come up the legs of the chair. So I was sitting in this massive pile of potatoes that ideally I would have liked the whole room that I was working in absolutely full of potatoes, the whole floorscape absolutely full of unpeeled potatoes. So that it would be seen that I could just simply have been there forever and ever and ever with a mountain of unpeeled potatoes to one side, peel everywhere, and a never-ending pile of unpeeled potatoes. I must have been peeling potatoes for about 6 hours, probably, or over the time, so prior to the private view and over the private view. People would come and talk to me. So that was tell me their stories. It was a bit, you know, how sometimes if you're walking in the company of somebody else, it's easier to talk over another action. It's easier for people to find their way to their own stories through a repetitive action, like walking. The conversations that come are quite heartful and interesting. And so when I was in the gallery peeling potatoes, and it seemed such a basic thing to bring, to do that action in the middle of an art gallery, it felt very tender and quite emotional to bring and make strange by wearing this extra long apron and sitting on this very high chair in this ocean of potatoes, to make strange something so basic that everybody in this culture has some sort of relationship with, or most people in this culture have a relationship with potatoes. So people would come along and they would tell me their stories.
Peeling vegetables was the repetitive action that inspired the artist Bobby Baker to develop one of her performances entitled Kitchen Show. In her book, Redeeming Features of Daily Life, Bobby writes, "The idea for this work came about while I was peeling carrots. I admired my technique enormously. I spent a great deal of time doing mundane tasks and I entertained myself while doing them by having imaginary conversations with famous men where I described my skill, dexterity and endurance, and they were always suitably fascinated and impressed. From this fantasy grew an entire show dedicated to ritualising repetitive actions and events in the kitchen, and Bobby Baker has performed this piece many times in different working kitchens around the world since she created it in her own home in 1991. The performance is a stylized routine of kitchen actions, presented one by one, and each marked in some significant way. Here is Bobby talking about carrots.
One of the most soothing things that I do in my kitchen is to rinse and prepare vegetables under running water. I know I shouldn't really leave the water running, especially when there's a bit of a drought on, but it's one of my luxuries, really, just to let the water run away, because I just love the feel of the water running over my hands and wrists. It's so calming and cooling. But I do try, whenever I can, to put the plug in, and then I can save the water and use it for something else later. I prefer preparing carrots, I think, more than anything else, because I just love the colour of them. And I know you shouldn't perhaps really peel carrots. You can just scrub them. But I just so love the colour under the skin, and I never feel they look quite right unless they're peeled properly. I just love that sensation of the water flowing. I love it when the sun's shining and you get these little splashes of water which catch the light and they sort of flicker, and the sound of the water running too. It's really a marvellous feeling. What I like to do as a way of marking this is to just get as much water as I can and throw it over my face. So it's sort of, it's quite a shock, but it's a wonderful sensation. And when I'm doing things like this, I'm sort of shot through with joy, really. It sounds silly, but it's true.
In Kitchen Show, Bobby Baker draws to our attention the personal significance we attribute to small things, to gestures and objects in domestic space.
When I welcome people into my kitchen, I always offer them hot drinks straight away. I get very anxious if I haven't. It's sort of the minutes tick by and it makes me really worried, because what's also really exasperating is when you say, "What would you like?" and they say, "Well, I'll have what you're having." And since I only drink tea, I get rather anxious because I think, well, do they want coffee really? And should I have a coffee so as to make them feel more at home? So I just like it when people say exactly what they want. I always feel it's more welcoming and better if I stir the milk and sugar in myself.
But along with such insights, Bobby Baker's performances very subversively and very deliberately collapse the borders between what we consider to be boring and worthless and what we consider to be high art. Bobby Baker's materials in Kitchen Show, a wooden spoon, a tub of margarine, are familiar and inexpensive. In using such objects, Bobby Baker doesn't provide escape or abstraction. Instead, she draws our attention constantly to the importance of our most ordinary moments and actions.
I usually buy one particular brand of margarine because it's so beautiful, the way it looks when you open the lid for the first time. I get really excited waiting to see what it's going to be like, because sometimes it's a bit disappointing. It's got kind of slightly damaged or dented, you know, if something's been put on top of the lid. But it's always that wonderful moment, just as you ease it open, think, am I going to get a perfect one? Because what they do, obviously, they've got some huge piping machine, and it must pipe it out when it's sort of soft, and you get this wonderful little nipple of a point where the pipe has left, and these amazing undulations that are set there. It's just so exquisite, and I gaze at it lovingly just for a moment, just to try and fix it in my mind. I know I've said this before and I'll probably say it again, but really it's moments like this that make it all worthwhile.
Although Bobby Baker's work doesn't deal directly with the domestic soundscape, her work provides an important political and imaginative context for any creative practice that deals with the home. Bobby Baker's assertion that carrot peeling is an activity worthy of a professional demonstration bears a kind of relationship to John Cage's idea that the everyday soundscape ought to be contemplated in a formal concert situation. Both ideas deal with the elevation of the everyday through the media of art forms, but Bobby's work also characterises a feminist perspective because it relates not only to generalised ideas concerning the everyday, but also to the specific realities of housework.
This action, my 12th, is the most important, really. It's my favourite one. It's the most significant because what it does is it actually pulls all the others together. And it's also very, very skilled and shows how versatile I've become. I couldn't do this action right at the beginning when I first started seriously doing housework. It's something that I've learnt as I've gone along. And it's roaming. I roam around from task to task, never always completing a task. You shouldn't feel that you have to finish things one by one, but just doing a little bit of each one and then going back to it so that you get this incredible sort of flow of movement.
The repetitive, necessary, comforting and unrelenting nature of housework struck me strongly when I came across a schedule printed in issue 2 of Karen magazine and entitled simply Housewife, 1946 to 1998.
Housewife, 1946 to 1998.
That is very, 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 very dull routine. And it's my grandmother's routine. And there's the odd piece of, right, so the odd ray of hope, which is sort of in food. It's kind of like the routine of food and the ritual of food and around chores and stuff. So this is her weekly routine. And then the kind of the ray of light on the Friday was, there we get, instead of a normal bit of cake, you get cream cakes, eclairs or donuts. I mean, I lived with my grandmother until I was 9 years old. So I was very familiar with that routine.
So every morning the sound of dusting and hoovering, and like every morning, no, there's one day where it doesn't. Thursday morning, no dusting and hoovering the living room.
No, because that's because she did it. She'd done it later on. I think because she was doing something else. I'm trying to remember now what she did. Thoroughly dust, polish and hoover the living room. Not just dust it, thoroughly dust it and hoover it. So that meant getting everything out. But there's some comfort in that structure, the familiarity of it. That also is something that you could sort of say, actually, there's a joy in that. Or a joy was kind of a happiness, a kind of joy, a sense of well-being was gained from that. I mean, I wouldn't personally, but maybe my grandmother did.
Hmm.
I became interested in using this schedule as a kind of found score. A score is a document that describes the organisation of sound events in time. It's like a recipe that says, at this point, you will strike the xylophone. And later on, at this point in time, you will play the flute. The musical score, like the magazine, the art exhibit or the recital, is a context in which we can rethink our relationship to everyday sounds. So maybe instead of playing the xylophone at a certain point in the score, we can boil the kettle to produce a sound. And instead of using musical structures traditionally associated with the score, such as the sonata, maybe we could organise sounds according to other time-based structures, such as one's daily routine. In the text in Karen magazine, the repetition of certain activities like hoovering, watching specific TV programmes and so on, are like recurring motifs or refrains in musical terms. These refrains give routines a rhythm that I thought could be used as the basis for making a recording. What I quickly realised, however, is that following the exact schedule edited and recalled by Karen from her grandmother's life would actually end up being about otherness rather than familiarity, since it's very different from my own life and is already a stylized and edited representation of reality. In order to look at repetition and habit in daily life, I realized I'd have to deal with my own behavior and take a look at the order of my own days, since nobody else's daily activities are more banal to me than mine. In turn, your daily life will be ordinary to you, and my life may seem comparatively weird. Your life will be punctuated by different sound events, by your own rhythm, by other appliances and voices unfamiliar to me. Here is one Monday of my life, compressed into 8-second recordings, detailing specific events.
This is a Vinkaloo Line train to Elephant and Castle. Please stand clear of the doors.
Because I put horseradish in it.
Horseradish.
It's the only way when you're making an egg mayo. It's really tasty, isn't it?
I love it.
And loaf. Hiya, no, look, that's fine. So tell us about the gig.
Can't you give a meatball for Christmas? Are you sure?
It's quite strong, so I reckon that just like one tea bag will probably do for both of us. Because I've been making pop.
But we don't hear normal, everyday life in 8-second sound bites. It's a continuous stream of sound events when it happens in real time. And the 8-second segments exaggerate and make everyday reality seem super extraordinary. But in terms of the domestic soundscape, the problematic issues concerning mediation, the form of presentation work about the everyday should take, the way sounds should be collected and so on, are precisely what make the territory so rich. And when everything you find in reality is interesting, what do you choose to work with? I don't believe that question can be conclusively answered for everyone, because what counts as the everyday is very subjective from one person to the next. But there are identifiable habits and routines and commonly shared rituals and experiences which we spend a great deal of our lives immersed in. And there is an identifiable cultural history in which these commonplace activities and experiences get passed off as being unworthy of artistic consideration or even profane. Artists who work to redeem this discounted material agitate and contest the established definitions of cultural value. Look, they say, isn't the world immediately to hand interesting? Stop, listen, they say, doesn't it sound amazing? After hearing Peter Cusack's recording of the bagel shop on Brick Lane, I had to make a journey there myself, to hear it with my own ears and to contemplate why this soundscape is someone's favourite London sound. Standing in the noisy queue and waiting for my salt beef bagel, I thought to myself that I'll never be able to buy a bagel there again without thinking of it as a sound installation. You've been listening to Felicity Ford and the third episode of the Domestic Soundscape podcast series commissioned by Sound and Music. This podcast was created especially for the Cut and Splice Festival 2009, and full show notes, links and images are available on the Cut and Splice website at www.cutandsplice.com.